The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Now, we should turn to today's papers. In a moment, I will go to our panel. But to let you know what each of them say this morning, The Independent leads with Harris fears alienating Martin over election call. It goes on to say, the Taoiseach risks a backbench backlash if he does not call an election next month, or falling out with Micheál Martin if he does. The front page also shows a photograph of a young child looking back as families flee Lebanon across the Masnou border crossing with Syria as the crisis grows there. The Irish Times, Israel warns Ireland to move peacekeepers. The area around the Irish Army outpost in Lebanon has seen intense fighting between IDF and Hezbollah. Their lead photograph is of Robert Deegan, the Irish soldier killed in Ukraine. The Examiner goes with Irish evacuated from Lebanon. The evacuation of 24 Irish citizens and their families from Lebanon has taken place amid growing concern of an all-out war in the Middle East. Their main photo is of a moment captured in Jackie Lennox's chip shop in Cork, which had its last day of trading yesterday, with hundreds queuing in the rain for the Last Supper and to give a handshake or a hug. And finally, the Daily Mail goes with 2.7 billion euro. That's the astonishing cost of the state tender just to upgrade the ticketing system on our trains and buses to contactless. The National Transport Authority has been criticised for issuing a 2.7 billion tender to roll out a contactless ticketing service across public transport. Well, to delve deeper into those stories, I'm joined in studio by Craig Hughes, the Daily Mail political correspondent. Good morning, Craig. Good
morning.
And to my left, Valerie Cox, journalist and author. Good morning, Valerie.
Good morning.
So will we start with the spending then that's going on? And there are two stories in the paper this morning. That 2.7 billion, let's start there to get our transport system contactless. Tell us more, Valerie.
Well, it seems like an extraordinary amount of money. And one of the things pointed out in the paper this morning is, of course, that this is actually more than the original tender for the National Children's Hospital, which was 980 million at that stage. It does seem an extraordinary amount of money. I suppose we're talking about the infrastructure, the machines, all the rest of it. But like, we already had that, I thought. I mean, you've got machines that you can flash your cards at. So why are we looking for more advanced ones, you know? It does seem like an awful lot of money. And you kind of wonder, you know, the government is spending money on things that people really feel we maybe don't need, don't want. I mean, I'm not going to talk about bike sheds, but there's so many other things in the papers this morning as well, where they're spending money, the phones and so on, phone covers. You know, this is isolating people and we're wondering where it's coming from, because generally speaking, a major expense, you kind of feel we know a bit about it before it happens, whereas this has just been dumped on everybody and it is such a lot of money. I'm quite certain that could be done cheaper.
Now, I certainly know as somebody who would regularly get the bus or the Dart, and I think we're all getting used to tapping our phones every time we step out of the house. I do always wonder why I'm fumbling for a Leap card, and it just seems like a very crude way to operate. But I mean, we're not techies. I assume it's not simple just to go and make sure everyone can tap their phone getting on and off. I think it'd be much better for people travelling here to Ireland and being tourists around the country. But what is the tendering process, do we know, Craig? What happens when the government want to spend money on something? How come things seem to get these massive bills?
Yeah, so they would have come up with their own estimate of what it was, and then they would have put it out to the market saying, this is what we want to achieve. So roll it out on, I guess, your Lewis, your bus service, your rail, and I guess it also covers the metro as well. But when my colleague Brian Mahan was putting this story together, he was talking to industry sources in the UK, for example, and they were laughing at the figure, and they were saying, you know, for example, when it was rolled out in the London Underground, which is much more access points, it was only a fraction of the cost. So the fact that it can be done first to a lower cost by our nearest neighbours and not here is something that will kind of frustrate people. We already have Catherine Murphy, the deputy chair of Public Accounts Committee, saying that this is akin to them spending monopoly money, and looking to probe further there. The NTA came back and said, okay, well, 2.7 billion is a lot of money. That is for over a 20-year life cycle, and it could include add-ons that they're not yet sure about yet or not. And they said that it's an indicative price. They might not spend the whole amount. However, you know, as we know, big government projects rarely tend to come in under budget. So I wouldn't be holding your breath for an underspend there just yet.
Or that it's going to happen anytime soon with all of this red tape and decisions and all the time it takes. I mean, that's a frustration as well. Valerie, you touched on it there. There's another bill that will surprise people, and it's how much to have pouches available in schools so that kids get off their phones.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite, this is an amazing story because it's not something anybody expected. I mean, there was absolutely no advance notice of this, suddenly out of the blue, to give a pouch to every child in the country. I was very interested in the piece written by Senator Maloney here in The Independent. He says it's chicken feed, and he thinks it's a really great idea. I don't think anybody would query that it is a great idea. They're only querying the cost of it. But he's also saying, you know, apart from the stuff that the principals are saying, the principals of the schools say it's a great idea. Some of them welcome the pouches. Some of them already have their own systems in place. And the children, of course, one of the points he's making here is that kids will always find a way to get around it. For example, you just go get a dusty old phone somewhere at home and you check that in instead of your current mobile, which you have in your pocket.
Yeah,
and
they are wily.
They are. I mean, you know, they're going to get around it, or some of them are certainly going to get around it. But, you know, there's a lot in the papers today from all the different factions. The opposition parties, of course, are saying, oh my God, such a waste of money. This is absolutely appalling. But I was just looking as well. They have a useful rundown in the Indo of some of the other countries around Europe and America and what's going on. And nobody else seems to be either spending this money or, you know, going to such lengths. In Hungary, though, for example, there were street protests recently against the dismissal of a principal who refused to implement a smartphone ban. So, you know, people feel very, very strongly about this. Initially, they even banned them for senior infants. The UK, they simply hand them over on arrival, no cost whatsoever. The Netherlands just don't allow them in. But in New York, interestingly enough, the ban had to be reversed because parents were kicking up that they couldn't keep in touch with their kids. Well, now, in my day, and I think today, if you have an emergency at home, you ring the school and you say, please, teacher, will you grab my child out of class? You know, somebody's ill or whatever it is. The kids do not have to have a phone on them for this. And there's loads of positive stuff about not allowing the phones in, particularly for the kids' mental health. And the scientific evidence as well, that if you've got phones in the room, there's a gentle hum a lot of the time. And kids are actually on edge, waiting to see what message is going to come up next. There's a story from one teacher who was being filmed secretly by her class, one of the kids in the class, who then put the video up on social media. So I think it's very hard for teachers as well if they have to sit in this environment. But why can't we just use plastic bags?
This is what I don't understand. Now, there's a lot to process there. I mean, jumping out at me is what senior infant needs a mobile phone. But aside from all of that, when I heard of the pouches, I sort of pictured in my mind, you know, those storage things you can get that hang on the back of a door and there's loads of things for you to put, like maybe your shoes.
Shoe holder, yeah.
I thought that,
yeah,
you know, a school office was going to have that, that the kid would come in, like a locker system, put theirs in. But these are like zip pouches. We have a teenager doing like an internship with us here, when we were questioning this morning, that they then carry around with them.
Yeah.
And this is costing 9 million, Craig.
Is there not some sort of electronic release on it where it opens the end of the day? But I think the other point I'll make on this, and I think Matt Cooper makes it very well in the Irish Daily Mail today, is that, you know, the state shouldn't be paying the cost of this. We shouldn't be rolling this out. You know, we shouldn't make the cost be absorbed blanketly. So, for example, if you can afford to buy your child a phone that costs €1,000, well, then you can pay €20 for this system in the school. Similarly, it's also been extended to fee-paying schools. So schools where the fees are your thousands of euro a year, where the teachers are already funded by the state, are also going to be able to claim this. It's absolutely ridiculous. I'm not sure why, you know, a good old fashioned discipline can't be put in place. Well, why they can't just have a rule in the school whereby if you're caught with your phone, it's taken off you, and your parents have to come and maybe even pay a fine to get it back. I mean, with this idea of rolling out this to every school in the country, I just think it's short sighted and not thought out.
Now we are going to be covering this a little bit later with the ISPCC and the amount of dangers that are out there, because phones and young people is top line in so many discussions within the media and within in households. And you know, I hear what Matt Cooper is saying. You know, I read it myself that, you know, parents need to be getting involved here. But I think parents need support. We need support at policy level. We need support at school level. This is a tricky topic. And I think when we start talking about fee paying schools, sometimes we think, sure, all of these people have the money. I think because we're not supporting families in the education system, particularly when it comes to neurodivergence, there are people who are pooling as much money as possible as they can to send somebody to a fee paying school to get the best that they can out of an education system that isn't serving them. Yeah. So to assume just because it's a fee-paying school there's plenty of money knocking around, I don't think is a true representation. I still don't think it costs 9 million.
Sorry, hold on a second. If you want to get into the fee-paying school debate, we can. I mean, you're talking about a subsection there when you're talking about neurodivergence. We're the only country in Europe that pays for fee, that where the state pays for the teachers in schools that are fee-paying. So if you want to talk about equality, that isn't it.
But the other thing about the phones is I don't think anybody is disagreeing with what you're talking about neurodivergence and so on. Absolutely. But we're only talking about the way we're doing it. And I mean, Ziploc bags or something. Or do you remember the way teachers used to stand up to kids in the old days and they'd stand at the entrance and they'd say, hang on, you're wearing the wrong colour shoes. You're wearing the wrong colour socks. And today they're even monitoring kids' lunch boxes. You know, you've got a bag of potato in there. You've got sweets in there. So why can't they just stand at the entrance and take the phones off the kids? I just think it's a very simple solution. And we're making this extremely complicated and extremely expensive.
So with all of these discussions going on, how does this play into election then? Because that's also on the front of many of the papers, as I said. And, you know, there's talk of it being imminent. There's talk of it being pushed into the new year. And I suppose I was initially thinking perhaps the coalition would want to move with the momentum after the budget. But there's a lot of bad news about how the government are spending money and making decisions.
Yeah, I guess so. The way that this, you know, comes into the political zeitgeist, if you want to call it that, is that because of the recent issues of waste that we've seen around the bike shelter at Leinster House, the security hut, the seemingly overly expensive security hut at government buildings, 1.5 million, Sinn Féin have zoned in on waste of public finances as one of their key election drivers. That's going to be one of their big talking points. However, I should say the issue for them on the phone pouch issue is in Northern Ireland, where they're jointly in government, DUP Education Minister brought forward a very, very similar pilot plan for, I think, £250,000 it cost. And no, there was no rush from Sinn Féin to call a halt to it. And this is a pilot project. But yet when it's done south of the border, there's a clamour and Mary Lou MacDonald, the Sinn Féin leader, writing to the Taoiseach asking for it to be urgently halted. You know, while Sinn Féin were seeking to make hay with this, they had a lot of social media videos on it. They've been kind of caught by seeming to talk out of both sides of their mouth and either side of the border on this issue. But going back to the broader question of when we're going to have an election, it's what everyone's talking about in Leinster House at the moment. There's no getting away from it. The Taoiseach is travelling to Washington, DC on Tuesday. I'm travelling with him. He's going to the White House. But government TD's got a notice that the Dáil will be sitting an hour earlier on Tuesday. So initially you think, okay, that might not be that big of a deal. However, the government chief whip texted all the TDs to say that their presence was mandatory and that there could be an urgent vote afterwards. So the suspicion among government TDs is that they're going to be asked to vote through, or there'll be a schedule of imminent legislation brought forward that they're going to have to rush through in advance of the election being called. So I guess the natural question is, when do you think that might be? And I saw some suggestion that the Taoiseach might call it when he lands back from DC on Friday. I don't think that'll happen. And the reason being is we have a sense that it's going to be a short campaign. So minimum would be 21 days. That would mean that he's in Brussels the following week for 3 days. I don't think he's going to want to miss 3 days of campaigning in a very short campaign. So my view would be that when he comes back from Brussels on the 18th of this month, or in the kind of very few days afterwards, he'll go with the Oras and the Solve the Dole. And then from that point, it's 21 days, I'd say, after that will be your election date. So if I was a betting man, I would throw my money on, I would say, as early as the 9th of November for a general election.
All right. Well, I'll be watching and calling in that fiver, perhaps, yeah. Craig. We shall see. There's a story in the Irish Times, Valerie, that a record number of women are expected to run in the election, but insults and misogyny are making it more difficult for parties to encourage women to come forward. As someone who ran as an independent, tell us about your experience or your thoughts here.
Well, I mean, I think it's something everybody should do once in their lives. They should run for election. I was very much a single issue candidate as an independent by the rights of older people. And clearly I wasn't elected, but I found it a wonderful experience. And I have to say, you know, you're out all the time on the canvas, going to meetings, and you're meeting up all the time with the other candidates and seasoned politicians. I mean, I kept turning up locally on panels with Stephen Donnelly and Harris and, you know, people who'd been elected for quite a long time and who knew the ropes. And everybody couldn't have been nicer or kinder. And, I mean, they gave me tips. They told me what to do, who to ignore, who to spend time on. I mean, I thought it was fantastic. But I think overall, you know, you're absolutely right. The parties don't give women the support they need. They really don't. I think only something like 131 women have been elected to the Éireann over the years. A very small number indeed. And there are women coming forward now. We see a feature this morning on things that they've already had said to them. One woman was told that she looks like a porn star. That kind of ridiculous comment that nobody would, somebody rang her and said, I mean, nobody would ever say that to a man. And I think there is a big, big difference there. I remember the one thing when I was going around, a couple of people criticised my car because it had, I live in the country and it had muck and a few dents in it, you know, and they'd say, you know, canvassing and that, you know, but seriously, though, I think women find it much harder. Also, we've got the perennial homemaker thing where the woman is doing a dual purpose job. She's working as a TD if she gets elected. On the other hand, she's got the home, she's got the kids, and she's keeping all of that running. There was a very interesting piece in one of the papers yesterday talking about how the late Mary O'Rourke managed when she ran for election and when she was elected. And her husband, Enda, became a house husband. And he said to her, look, he said, you go and spend the week in Dublin and I will look after the kids during the week and get them to school and make their lunches and all the rest of it. And, you know, that was very modern thinking for the days when Mary was first elected. But I think it's absolutely brilliant. And I think there probably are men out there at the moment who are giving their wives who are elected that sort of support. But it needs to go up to the party echelons as well, because you do get the impression that they're very much a men's club when they get together. And, you know, Gemma Hussey wrote about it in her autobiography as well. I know it's several years ago, but she was saying that when she was elected, the men expected her to be the one to get up from the cabinet meeting and make the tea and bickies and bring them back. And she refused to do it.
Well, so, good. Stick on the kettle there, will you?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, it's just, I mean, I hope we do see record numbers and that there is more representation across the board.
We will have to leave it there. To Valerie Cox, journalist and author, and Craig Hughes, Daily Mail political correspondent, thank you very much.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.